Okay, we begin here on the top of Kaf Gimel Amud Aleph. Yesterday we left off with the Gemara's attempt to solve the problem between our Mishnah and the Braita that we brought. Our Mishnah indicates you're not allowed to have a behemah be alone with a akum. On the other hand, the Braita says that you can purchase behemot from them in order to use for a korbanot. And the Gemara answered based on Rav's position, again a position that we saw back on Tetvav Amud Aleph, that there's a difference between the goyis owned animal, where he's chas al mimono, and he will not have relationship with the animal because of the fact that it will ruin the animal or cause a monetary loss, versus when it belongs to someone else, where he's free to do what he wants because he doesn't really care about the monetary aspects of the animal because it's not his. That's how the Gemara dealt with it. Today we have another two approaches to dealing with that, the first of which is Ravina Amar Lo Kasho. That's not a problem. Ha lechatchila, ha diavad. Depends on how we're looking at this. Lechatchila, we're not going to offer the goy the opportunity or the possibility of being alone with the behema. Bidiavad, if the person purchases an animal for the korban, we're not going to say that we assume that something went wrong with this animal, there's something wrong with this animal. Over here, bidiavad, you have to interpret slightly differently than we normally would. Bidiavad usually is if something happened already, then we say, go ahead, and it's okay. If you look back at the Braita on the top of Chav Ber Amud Bet, it says Lochim, which is a Lashon Lechatchila. You're allowed to buy these animals for Korbanot. It's not telling you if you bought the animal already, you can use it for a Korban. We saw that yesterday in the Balei HaTosafot, that we wouldn't be able to survive without buying animals for them in order to bring for Korbanot. So Lochim over here means literally that you can Lechatchila buy the animal. And so Lechatchila and Bidiavad is rather a perspective in time, which is that if we're looking forward and we're worried about something happening, we don't want to facilitate that to happen. That's our Mishnah. That means Lechatchila, we will not allow the goy to be mityached in the behema because we worry about the possibility of something untoward happening over there. On the other hand, if we are purchasing a behema or after the fact, we're going to assume that nothing happened. So it's a difference in perspective of time. If we're looking forward in time, we're going to worry about it. If we're looking backwards and it's a question of whether we should be choshesh for that probability, we will not worry about it and we allow you to purchase the behema. So mana tamra, deshani ben lechatchila ben lediavad. How can I show you that there's such a concept that there is a difference between lechatchila and lediavad? It's not. Lo tityached isha imahem, mipnei shechashudim al arayot. Our Mishnah says that you can't allow a woman to be alone with them because of the problem of arayot, that is a chashad of arayot, just like there's a chashad of bestiality. Viraminu, we have in the Mishnah in Ketubot, Zayisha, shenech b'sha bidei obdei kochavim, a woman who is taken to captivity by the obdei kochavim. Ayidei mamon, if it was over a monetary matter, muteret lebaala, then when she is returned, she is muteret to go back to her husband. Ayidei nefashot, if it was a matter of life or death, Asura the Bala, then she's no longer permitted to go back to her husband. El alav shmamina. What you see from this is, shani lan ben lechatchila lediavad. Then we make a difference between before the fact and after the fact. Which is here, again, looking at the perspective of whether we will allow a woman to be alone with the akum, the answer is no. After the fact, when she's already been alone with them, then we're not going to say that the woman is asura. We're going to assume that she is still tehora. That's the same concept, which is, looking forward, we would not permit it. After the fact, we will say that we don't assume something happened, and therefore she can return to her husband. Rashi over here thinks that the situation or the circumstance is a case where we're dealing with an Eshet Yisrael, dealing with a wife of Yisrael. Now, when it comes to a woman who is raped, she is permitted to go back to her husband. A woman who engages willfully in a extramarital affair, then she cannot return to her husband. So what Rashi suggests over here is that the question that they're dealing with is whether this woman will acquiesce to the overtures of the individual or maybe even initiate these overtures because of the predicament that she's in. And so the Mishnah in Ketubot, if it was a monetary matter where she's not afraid for her life, then she won't acquiesce willingly to the individuals who take her into captivity. On the other hand, if it was over a dinei nefashot, it was over a matter of life and death, kashina shema nivalad achad mehem beratzon, we worry about the fact that maybe she acquiesced and willingly engaged in such an affair. And as Rashi notes over here, the Ketubot Mukach to Be'eshed Yisrael Koyi, that we're dealing with a woman who is a wife of Israel. So Rashi says, the question is, how much duress does the woman feel in this situation? And the question is not about the Yakum. The Yakum, we assume, is going to rape this woman. That's not the issue. The issue is, what's the woman's response to that? Or, is the woman even initiate such engagement between them? And it'll be depending on the circumstance that she finds herself in. That's the way Rashi reads it. The Baalei HaTosafot disagree with Rashi and say, based on the continuation of the Gemara in Ketubot, as well as the nature of the Gemara here, because as the Baalei HaTosafot point out, according to Rashi, how can you prove from the Mishnah in Ketubot that b'diavad, we don't consider the woman to be a nivelet? So according to Rashi, even if she is a nivelet, because she didn't do it willingly, she's still muteret the Baala. So the reason she might be muteret the Baala has nothing to do with whether there was Riviyah or there wasn't Riviyah. Rather, it has to do with whether she was a willing participant or not a willing participant. And by the case of Mamon, we'll just assume she wasn't a willing participant, but that doesn't prove that she wasn't nivelet. And therefore, the whole proof from that Mishnah in Ketubot doesn't work according to the way that Rashi is explaining it. And therefore, the Baalei HaTosafot favors saying, Lekach Nirah, the phrase, the Baalei Ma'iri, Be'eshet Kohen, that bonus Asura. By a wife of a Kohen, even if she's Nensa, even if she's raped, she cannot return to her husband. So here, the question is not about the woman herself, rather the question is about what the Akum is thinking. In a case of monetary matters, the Akum says it's too risky because I might lose out all my money if I engage and act in this way. And then if it's Dinei Nefashot, where he's not worried about any implications of this because it's Dinei Nefashot, in that situation, we say that he did take advantage of the woman, and we can assume that he did rape her because there's no downside for him in that situation. So the Baalei HaTosafot, the only reason she is mutaret to her husband is because she for sure didn't have biyah. Because if she had biyah, even if it was against her will, nevertheless she would be disqualified from her husband. And that's why the Mishnah Ketubot proves that b'diavad, we assume that she was not nivelet. And the Baalei HaTosafot, the reason that the case in Ketubot doesn't write asura l'kuna, but rather l'baala, is because in the latter case, in the Fashot, he agrees to Rashi that even if she was an Eshet Yisrael, she would be a Surah. Because of this problem, that it would be done Beratzon. That's the whole problem of the Fashot over there, and why she won't fight. That's why it uses the term Baala. Now with regards to Dinei Fashot, there are two possibilities of what Dinei Fashot are. One, Dinei Fashot means that this woman is Chayevet to be put to death, or that she will be put to death by them. That's one circumstance. There's another Dinei Nefashot, which is that they're taking her as a bargaining chip for her husband or some other matter which involves Nefashot. So in the case of the captor taking advantage of her, we would assume in the case where she's going to be put to death, there's no question that he raped her because he thinks she's going to be put to death anyway, and there's no downside to it. And even Ravino, who thinks there is such a limud of l'chatkila b'diavad from the Mishnah Ketubot, he will agree in a case of nefashot, where she is the individual who is implicated in the nefashot issue, that certainly over there we would assume that she is nivelet. He will rape her, and number two is that she will acquiesce because she thinks that might be her only salvation. But you have to say that the question revolves around nefashot, in a case where it's not necessarily that she's subject to a death penalty, but he's taking her and will kill her because either you don't pay the ransom or because they want the husband, whatever reason they want the husband. In that case, then maybe according to the Baalei HaTosafot, assume that she might have been raped. According to Rashi, maybe the woman will acquiesce to the overtures of the individual, thinking that that might spare someone's life or her life. And then the case of Dinei Mamonot, according to the Baalei HaTosafot, we assume that she was not touched at all. That's why she's muteret to go back to her husband, the Kohen. According to Rashi, we just assume that she might have been raped. She just wasn't engaged in that in a willing way. So now the Gemara says, Mimai, how do you know the distinction here is between l'chatkila and b'diavad? Dilma de'olam emelacha, afilu di'avad nami, lo. Maybe even the avad, we would not assume that this woman wasn't either raped or acquiesced to the overtures. And the reason from the case in Ketubot is, that there's a overarching mitigating factor for the individual, which is he wants his money back. And if he does something to the woman, he's not going to get his money back. And that's the reason for the case in Ketubot. So how can you prove from here that there's a difference between the Chatchila and Bidiabad? The truth is that there is a factor that exists in Ketubot that changes the whole dynamic of the situation, which is he wants his money back. And he took her in order to get his money back. Teida, and I can prove that to you, Tiktani Seifa, Ayitei Nefashot, Asura Lebala. If she's taking over matters of Nefashot, then she is Asura Lebala. Too low mide. And there's nothing more to say about this, meaning that it's very clear that the case in Ketubot is dependent on money and Nefashot, and has nothing to do with L'chatchila versus Bidiavad. Now, either you could say that that means we've rejected Ravina completely, or you could just say that the Gemara over here is rejecting the proof from Ketubot, but that doesn't necessarily undermine the fact that Ravina's position here could be true, just as that the case in Ketubot is not a proof to that fact. Because Tosafot says, if you reject Ravina's explanation that Bidiavad, it is okay, then he says the following statement, there'll never be a wife of a Kohen that can stay married to her husband. It's impossible that sometime in her lifetime that she didn't come into a situation, not necessarily intentionally, where she was alone with an Ove Kochavim, but came into Lekha Hefseid Mamon, in those situations where there's no money lost that could be the head there for her to be in that situation, Chashinan, we're going to worry about it. So he says, Yesh Lamar, Dein Zela Dichoy Ba'ama, Klomer Mehakalo Tuchiyach, that the rejection of the proof from Ketubot is exactly that. It is a rejection of the proof, but it does not discard Ravina's actual chiluk between the Chatchila and Bidiabad. And in addition, Tosfo points out that you can differentiate between cases of Yichud over a very short time period in which she doesn't know anything, versus Nechbisha, where the person is taken into captivity and then under the auspices of the other party, they have no control over their own destiny in those situations. Treated as an object, not as a person. That's a case where Rechashina, in a case of Yichud, where she's not under the auspices of the Oved Kochavim, we're not going to be Chashina. So Bali Tosfot say, even in the end where we reject Ravina's proof from Ketubot, Omikol Makom Divi Ravina Emete. Nevertheless, what Ravina says is true. We still accept his distinction of L'chatchila and Bidiavad. Now, there are two questions here that the Bali Tosfot deal with, one of which is, when Ravina brought this as a proof, what was he thinking? It's clear in the case from Ketubot that there's a distinction between Mamon and Nefashot. So what was he thinking in making a distinction between L'chatchila and Bidiavad? What was Ravina thinking when he brought the proof from this case in Ketubot, where there is a distinction between Mamon and Nefashot? How could he be proof a heter diavad mihacha? Havada mishum hefsed mamonu. Clearly because of the monetary losses that he could incur, that he doesn't touch the woman. The reason for by Mamon is that he has money outstanding with this individual. He's taking the woman as collateral to get his money back. And if he does something to the woman, he's going to lose money. And that's clearly what is the driving force behind the halacha in that case. Beish Lamar, the Sava Ravina, the Kevin the Nechbasha, Shehi Misura Biodo, since she is taken into captivity under the auspices of the captor, Ayelo Lo Yasor Beish Kohen, they should have restricted it when it comes to Beish Kohen, or the Mechash, Mia the Bilatonis. Maybe there was a rape that was involved. Va'afa gav the Ika Hefseid Mamon. Even though he might lose out his money, Mida Sharina Nocha Diyavad, who had then Abecha Delecha Hefseid Mamon. And over here where we allowed it, Bidiyavad, then it should be true even in a case where there is no Hefseid Mamon. Utamuda Dochi, the late Lehak Svoro. And the Gemara says that that's not the logic here. Eleit Le Hefseid Mamono, shiny. That the Hefseid Mamon is the integral factor over here. So what the Bali Tosafot suggests over here is that Ravina's focused on the position of the individual, which is, are they free or are they under the auspices of another party? Here we see they're under the auspices of another party, and despite that fact, we say Bidiavad, we don't consider it to be a surah. So then he extrapolates that and says, that means even in a compromising position, the individual is assumed to be okay after the fact. We won't lechatchila let them go into that position, but after the fact, it's okay. The Gemara says, you emphasize the wrong factor over here. The factor is not that you're in a compromised position. The factor that matters over here is the Hefseid Mamon, that he's not willing to lose money in this situation, and that's the key element. That's how the Bali Tosafot described why Ravina brought the proof from there, why the Gemara rejected the proof from there. Again, Ravina's proof seems to be on a weaker footing, but he wants to ignore the Hefsed Mamon and just say that the case is a case where you're under the auspices completely of another party, and that's what makes it unusual. And that's what the Baal Tosfot in the end say maybe distinguishes between the case of our Mishnah and the case in Ketubot. That's number one. Number two is, how does the Gemara know from the Seifa, Ayyadei Nefashot Asura Lebala, what does that prove? The Reish also says, Ayyadei Mamon, that she is Muteret Lebala. That means that it leaves cases in the middle which are not addressed by the case in Ketubot. Case of Ketubot deals with life-threatening issues and monetary issues. What happens if it's not a monetary issue, but it's also not a life-threatening issue? What happens if it sits between Mamon and Nefashot? How does the Gemara know that the case in Ketubot is dependent on money? How we know that this deal that the Gemara is making in the end is correct? The Baal Tosfot explains that V'ish Lamar, the Vaday Shelo Yadei Mamon Asura, even if there's no monetary matters, she is Asura, the Isaka Datcha Muteret. If you think the woman was Muteret in a case that's between Nefashot and Mamon, which we gave the example of a person who's taken for ransom, where there is no Hefsed Mamon because he doesn't have any outstanding debts or obligations that the person will lose, it's upside if he gets the money. Over there, is she Muteret or not? I might not cut Reisha Hefsed Mamon. Why does the Reisha give a case of Hefsed Mamon? Litnei Shalyo Ayadei Nefashot Muteret. The better language would have been, if it's not over a life-threatening matter, then she would be Muteret. El Vaday Hefsed Mamon Davka Nakat. And what it's saying is it's narrowing the scope of where there is a heter. If you wanted to say a woman was Muteret, except for the situations in which there was Nefashot, then the language you should have used in the Reisha is Shalo Ayadei Nefashot Muteret. The fact that it specifically states that it's Ayadei Mamon, it's Muteret, it's limiting the scope of this heter to matters where there is Hefsed Mamon. And that means that any case beyond that, that means whether it's Nefashot or not Nefashot, woman will be considered Asura. And that is the deal that the Gemara is making over here. Teida Tony Seif Ayadei Nefashot Asura LeBala. So over there we're going to take that as Lav Dafka Nefashot. Just means anything besides Mamon. And the reason being is because if you thought otherwise, then the ratio should have been written differently. It should have been Shlo Yedei Nefashot rather than Mamon. The fact that it specifies Mamon in the ratio indicates you the limitation of that heter to only Hefsed Mamon. Anything outside of Hefsed Mamon, we're going to worry about the woman either being raped according to the Baal Tosafot, being a surah to her husband, a Kohen, or for Rashi, it means that we worry about her willingly acquiescing to the overtures or even engaging in this activity to try to save her life. And therefore, she is a surah to her Baala, who is in Israel. And even Ravina, who thinks there is such a limud of Lechatkila Vidyavad from the Mishnah to both, he will agree in a case of Nefashot, where she is the individual who is implicated in the Nefashot issue, that certainly over there, we would assume that she is Nivelet. According to him, only Bidyavad would we not assume it in cases where there is Hefsed Mamon, in cases where there is no Hefsed Mamon, and there is no Nefashot. And that would be his explanation of the Mishnah. Gemara in the end rejects that and says that it's only by the case of Hefsed Mamon that we declare her not to be Nivelet. But in cases that are not Nefashot and not Mamon, there we will assume she is Nivelet. And that's the difference between the Gemara saying that that Mishnah is not a proof to Ravina because it's only about Hefsed Mamon, and Ravina, who thinks it applies to anything besides Nefashot, that B'diavad we don't consider to be Nivelet. Gemara in the end says it's very clear from that Mishnah, the Deal Kalashon, as Tosafot explains, makes it clear that it is about Mamon and not about Nefashot. So that's the answer proposed by Ravina. Ravina is a Batra, and generally, since Ravina is a Batra, we would have passed an Halacha like Ravina. That's what the Baal Tosafot pointed out yesterday, that the order of the Gemara here is a little bit strange, because now we have Rabbi Pedat, who is an earlier Amora than Ravina. You would have expected the Gemara to bring Rav's solution yesterday. Today's solution, the first one would be Rabbi Pedat, and the last one would be Ravina, because he's a Batra. And then we would have Paskin like Ravina, who's a Batra, and it's the last case. It says the Gemara flipped their positions over here to tell you that the Gemara is rejecting Ravina. The Gemara sort of said that, Betulo Mide. Again, the Baal Tosafot don't read that as a rejection of Ravina, they read that as a rejection of the comparison to Ketubot, but you could read it as a rejection completely of Ravina. And now the Gemara brings us the final position, Rabbi Pedat, which the Baal Tosafot claim is the way the Gemara is leaning and Paskin's Halacha, and that is the justification for why the Baal Tosafot say we today allow our animals to be mityached b'di akum. And that's what we discussed at the end of yesterday's daf. the view of the Balei Tosafot, which is Rabbi Padata Ma'ar Lokasha, Ha Rabbi Eliezer, Ha Rabbonon. You're dealing with different authors over here. The authorship of the Braita is the Rabbonon. The authorship of our Mishnah is Rabbi Eliezer. The Tanan, we have a Mishnah by Paraduma, Gabi Parah Chatat, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Eina Nikhechet Min Ha'ub De Kochavim. You're not allowed to purchase a Paraduma from a non-Jew. Bechachamim Matirim. On the other hand, the Chachamim say it's totally fine to buy it from a non-Jew. My love, Bahakamiflagate. This is what we got to assume that they are arguing about. Rabbi Eliezer Savar, Chashin on the Revi'a. Eliezer says we worry about bestiality, therefore you cannot purchase it from the Goy. He's the author of our Mishnah. Lo Titiached. You can't leave them alone with the animal. Rabbanan Savar, Lo Chashin on the Revi'a. Rabbanan say we don't worry about bestiality. So they're not the authors of our Mishnah, but they are the authors of the Braita that said you can purchase these animals for Korbanot, just like you purchase the animal for a Parah Aduma. Where says, Mimai, how do you know that's the case? Dilma dukuli ama lo chashin le revia. Maybe everybody agrees we don't worry about bestiality. Bahacha hainu taima de Rabbi Eliezer. Maybe the reasoning of Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah in Parah is based on the Rabbi Yehuda Marav. This position of Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Dama Rabbi Yehuda Marav, if you put on top of the Parah Aduma, a Rashi calls an Uda Shel Sakin, it's a bundle of empty sacks that you put on top of the animal. It then brings an alternative, which is that it is the wooden needle that's used for weaving of sacks. If you look at the Rabbeinu Chananel, he brings a third interpretation, which is Perish Uda Havak Mitsuyar Shel Adis Shel Dimota Bebeima Bedomela O. It is some sort of decorative blanket or cover that they put on the animal, and it's similar to a yoke that is placed on the animal. So you have one of three options over here in terms of what this Uda Shel Sakim is, but it is Pusel the Parat Chatat, because by Parat Duma, the requirement in the Torah is Shelo Aleh Aleha O, that nothing was placed on the animal. It never worked in that way or had a yoke placed on it. And all of these items would be deemed to be problematic in terms of a yoke that is placed on the animal. And so therefore, he holds with this Rido Marav that we're choshesh for this possibility, and that's why you can't purchase it from the Nachri, because you have no idea if he put something on the back of the Parah Aduma. Ube Egla, when you're dealing with the Egla Arufa, Ashit Timshoch Ba, until it pulls or walks with it, because there it's not only Lo Aleh Aleha O, but there it says it can't Asher Lo Uvad Ba. No work was done with it. So it's not simply that it was a yoke put on it, but it actually has to do something, has to engage in work. So the Egla Rufa has a higher threshold of what will make it pasul. Mar Savar Chashinan, Mar Savar Lo Chashinan. Maybe the machlok between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim is about whether we worry about this possibility that they utilize the Parah Aduma in a way that would make it psula. Rabbi Eliezer says, yes, we do worry about it. Chachamim say no. Mar says, Lo Saka Datcha, Mishum Necha Purta Lo Mafsit Tuva. For a little bit of benefit, no one is going to give up so much money. The value of the animal is so great that nobody's going to put on a bag, bunch of empty sacks or do something silly over here which is going to ruin the value of the animal. Achanami. So let's say here too. Lema mishuma na porta, lo mafsid tuva. If that is the underlying thought process why we don't think that the goy is going to put something on the back of the animal because he knows he'll lose so much money over a small benefit, why don't you say the same thing with regards to bestiality? If he engages with the animal, he's going to lose all value associated with this Parah Aduma. There's so much money to lose over here. Why would he ever do this? My answer is, Hatam Yitzro Tokfo. Over there, his Yitzro gets the better of him. And it's a case of a rational decision between getting a little benefit, monetary benefit, and losing a ton of money that is the value of this animal. He can make a rational decision and say, I'm not going to put this stuff on the animal, because it's going to hurt the long-term value of the animal. On the other hand, when he has desire or lust, or something that's driving him, that's not a rational thought, there he can't make the right decision, even though he's going to lose a ton of money based on that decision. So this position, Rabbi Haddad, will be, as we later on will discuss, dependent on whether he subscribes to Rav's position or not. If he rejects Rav's position outright, then Yitro Tokfo would have an application here by Parah Aduma, as well as by the case of our Mishnah where Rav said that he is Chasa Behem Tov, Rabbi Padat believes that that doesn't apply at all. Or you could argue that there's a distinction between the case of Rabbi Padat and Rav,
and that he will subscribe to Rav's position, but over here there's a mitigating factor that makes it Yitzro Tokfo, and that is explained by the Balei Tosafot as the following.
Tema, Damar Rav, Ubdei Kukavim, Chasal Behem To, Shelo Te'aker. So we said, based on Rav, that the Ubdei Kukavim takes precautions, not to have bestiality with his own animal, because of the fact that he's going to lose money. Why don't we answer over there the same thing, which is Yitzro Tokfo? And therefore, there is no rational decision that is being made over there. He says, "V'yesh lamar shani hocha kevin de damei yikarim omedet limkor liYisrael kevin shuvadai mukar apara savur ulalim beno chosheish kevin shitzro tokfo." The difference being is that by Rav, we said that he doesn't do it to his own animal because he has a long-term problem that he's going to ruin his animal forever, and then he's going to lose the value of the animal to himself and over a long period of time. On the other hand, over here, he knows the only value in this animal, or this parah adumah, is selling it to a Jew. He's not going to keep the animal. The animal is worth so much more in someone else's hands than it is in his own hands. So what he thinks is, I can pull this off. I will have bestiality with the animal, they won't figure it out, and I'll be able to sell it. Even though the money here is so great, on the other hand, the period of time in which it affects him is very short. And he figures he can cover the whole thing up and sell it off, and nobody will ever know about it. The other hand, by his own animal, the problem is that it doesn't matter if anybody else finds out about it. It matters that he can't use the animal anymore. He can't have reproduction with this animal. The animal is going to be ruined qua the animal and its usage to him. And so there's a difference between where he's going to lose out because the animal is going to be useless to him over the long range, and therefore his Yitzro Tokfo, we don't say, versus over here where he knows the only purpose of his animal is for a sale, and maybe Yitzro Tokfo will overcome and overwhelm him, and therefore, he's going to sell it to the Jew, and he doesn't worry about the Yitzro Tokfo, because he thinks he can cover it up. If you remember from yesterday's daf, we distinguished between us buying from a Ro'eh, and a Goy who gives it over to the Ro'eh. And the Gemara said that the Ubdei Kukavim knows what the other Kukavim is doing. We aren't as savvy to figure out what he's doing. And that's his bet here, is that the Jew isn't savvy enough to figure it out. So Yitzro Tokfo, and he had the bestiality and figures he'll sell it off to the Jews and then he'll never figure out what's happening. The other hand, when it's his own animal, then it's nothing about deceiving the Jew. He's going to have an animal that is impaired now, and that's something that's not worthwhile to him. All right, so now, Gemara is Rabbi Padat's answer, which is, there's a difference between Rabbi Lezer and the Chachamim. Gemara tries to say that that's their machlokit in the Mishnah in Parah. And then the Gemara says, maybe not. Maybe nobody worries about bestiality. And the reasoning behind Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim is a machloket as to whether chashinan, whether we do or do not worry about the behavior of the individual given the loss of money that would be involved in this situation. In the end, the Gemara says that you can't learn it that way because monetary loss will not be a governing factor over here because of the problem of Yitzro Tokfo. And given that, you can't make that as the distinction that's here. And therefore we say, the difference here is between Rabbi Lezer and the Chachamim that are arguing about whether we are Choshesh for Riviyah or not Choshesh Riviyah. The Gemara says, V'doma, Dukuli Amalo Chashin Riviyah. So now the Gemara says, let's try this option that everybody agrees we don't worry about bestiality. V'achayanu Tainu the Rabbi Lezer. This is the reasoning behind Rabbi Lezer. K'detani Shila. Detani Shila, my time at the Rabbi Lezer. Shila says, what's the reasoning behind Rabbi Lezer's position? It says, by the Paraduma, the Peril B'nei Israel, V'kuelecha, B'nai Yisrael yikhu, b'nai Ubdei Kukavim yikhu. So the way Rashi learns it is that instead of reading the word v'yikhu elecha, which means to purchase or take for yourself, that you should read the word as v'yakichu, that they will provide, supply, or sell to. I think they do it is because v'yikhu elecha is a strange term to use in the Pasuk. Other than that, when the Torah tells you to do something, it doesn't say v'yikhu elecha, it just simply said, tells you what to do, it gives you the tzivoy what to do. Doesn't specify that you have to take this item. The fact that the Torah tells you to take the item is a strange language, and that's, I think, what's precipitating the drasha of Vayakichu versus Vayakhu Elecha. Obviously, you have to purchase it in order to do whatever it is that you're doing, so why does the Torah have to tell you that? It must be that it's coming to teach you something beyond that. And the way you're reading the Pasuk now is, B'nai Yisrael Yakichu, B'nai Yisrael will be the providers of the Parah Adumah, B'nai Ubdei Kukavim Yakichu. And Ubdei Kukavim cannot be the providers of the Parah Adumah. In that way, it would be a Gzeirat HaKatu. The machlok between them would simply be whether you darshan v'yikhu elecha as v'yakichu, whether a Jew has to be the one supplying the Parah Adumah, or is it even a goy that could be the supplier of the Parah Adumah? Chachamim will say, it doesn't matter. Whoever supplies it is fine. Rabbi Elazar says it's only if a Jew supplies it. But in that way, it will not impact on our question over here, which is, are we choshesh for Rabia or not? Because that's not the matter that they're arguing about. Where it says, lo saka datka, you cannot explain their machloket in that manner. The Tani Seifa, because in the latter part of that Mishnah it says, v'chein haya Rabbi Elazar posel b'chol ha-korbanot kulan. Because Rabbi Elazar is posel and all of the remaining korbanot. If you want to say what Shila says, Bishlama Parak Tiba Kicha. When it comes to Paraduma, you have Xerata Katuba Ikwelecha Elakulu Korbanot, Kicha Ktibo. Since when did the other Korbanot have the word Kicha that's associated with it? This is a Xerata Katub that applies by Paraduma. It does not necessarily have application by other Korbanot. If that's the case, how do you explain Rabbi Eliezer's position in the Seifa? Why would there be a din that is the same Paraduma as it is for Shar Korbanot if the Gzeret HaKetuv only exists by Paraduma? And so that cannot be the explanation for Rabbi Eliezer's position. The truth is, then, what was Shiva thinking in that case? Because he now indicates that that is the reasoning behind Rabbi Eliezer. The truth is that later on in the Gemara, Daf Kaf Dalet, the Gemara will make a distinction between Paraduma and Shar Korbanot, and if that's the case, what you'll have to say, Shila, in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, is that by Paraduma there are two disqualifications. By other Korbanot there's only one disqualification. By Paraduma it's both Revi'a and the problem of purchasing it from a non-Jew. Whereas by other Korbanot you only have the problem of Revi'a. And so he will explain Rabbi Eliezer's Shita, or in essence he could differentiate between Paraduma and Kodshei Mizbeach as to what the disqualification is, and not say that it's a consistent reason between the two of them. And therefore, Shila is just explaining Rabbi Elazar's position with regards to Paraduma. He's not explaining his position with regards to the Shar Korbanot. The Gemara says, V'dilma, adkan lo pligi Rabbanan leiter Rabbi Elazar. Maybe the Rabbanan only argue on Rabbi Elazar. Ela bepara de dameha yekarim. By a Paraduma, where it's very expensive. Above a Shar Korbanot, modile. Maybe they would agree to him. So now, that provides another problem, which is, let us assume that you are right, that the reasoning behind Rabbi Eliezer over here is that we're Koshesh V'Rivia, and the Chachamim disagree and say we're not Koshesh V'Rivia. Gemara at this point says, wait a minute, maybe you should say even within the position of the Chachamim, that their position is unique to Paraduma. By the case of Paraduma, where the Meha Yikarim, over there we say that they're not Koshesh V'Rivia. Because it's such an expensive animal, they're not willing to risk all that money and have Rivia with the animal. But in a normal Korban, maybe they would agree to Rabbi Eliezer's position. How do you know then that the Chachamim have a differentiated opinion from Rabbi Eliezer even in regular korbanot? So then, Ve'elahad Tanya, Lochimen, Ve'emot, the korban, Mani. If that's the case, then who is the author of this braita? It can't be Rabbi Eliezer, it can't be the Chachamim. Because both of them are Choshesh L'Rivia, and that braita says it's okay to take a korban from the animals of an Ovei Kochavim. Because now you're saying that Rabbi Elazar believes both by Paraduma and regular animals were Choshesh Rivia. Chamim disagree with Paraduma, but they agree by other animals and regular Korbanot that it is a problem of Rivia. So then the Braita that we brought in yesterday's daf that says there is no Chash for Rivia when you purchase an animal for a Korban, who's the author of that? Lo Rabbi Elazar, lo Rabbanan. Can't be altered by the Elazar, can't be altered by the Rabbanan. Ba'o Tanya Behedja. We also have another Braita that says explicitly, Mal Tribulei Chabrohi, the Rabbi Eliezer. What did the friends, the other Chachamim, answer to Rabbi Eliezer about his position regarding Korbanot that cannot be brought from animals that are belonging to an Ovei Kochavim? Kol Tzon Kedar, Yikavetzu Lach, Tatatat, Yalu Al Ratzon Mizbechi. So you see here, in Yeshayahu, which is the Aftorah for Parshat Kitavo, Yishayahu over there says that all Tzon Kedar is Rashi notes over here, Kedar is Yishmael. All the flocks of Yishmael, Yikav Tzulach, will be gathered in for you. And then the following on, it says, Yalu al Ratzon Mizbechi. That will be placed on Mizbeach. So you have an explicit pasuk in Yishayahu that says the animals of the non-Jews will be used as korbanot for the Jews. Will be put on the Mizbeach. So you see here that the Navi clearly does not worry about the animals of the Akum when it comes to putting it on the Mizbeach. Truth is, they could have brought that from Yitziat Mitzrayim as well, where Moshe says to Paro, not only are we going to take animals from ourselves, but you're going to give us animals to bring Olot and Zvachim. You could argue that's pre-Har Sinai, so maybe that's different. But over there you have a similar idea that we don't worry about the animals of the Mitzrayim when we're going to put them on the Mizbeach. From there it's clear, lo pligi ela b'chashasha, that they argue across the board about chashash, about heicha did vaday rava pasla. So the conclusion from this is that the machloka between the Chachamim and Rabbi Elezer clearly must be about a chashash for Reviyah or not. Chachamim are not choshesh Reviyah, that means both by Parah Adumah, also by regular korbanot, because that's the pasuk they brought to show or demonstrate that even by regular korbanot, there is no chashash of Reviyah. And Rabbi Elezer disagrees, both by Parah Adumah and by other korbanot, that there is a chashash of Reviyah. And that is the machloka between them. And that's how Rabbi Padat solves the problem here. He says, our Mishnah is Rabbi Eliezer, where we are Choshesh v'Riviyah. The bright about Korbanot is the Chachamim, or the Rabbonon, and that's why we're not Choshesh for Riviyah. So here we have Ravina's answer and Rabbi Padat's answer. And again, the Baal Tosafot favored Rabbi Padat's answer as being the answer that the Gemara accepts. Now, the Baal Tosafot raises a significant issue on the previous Amud, which is that there is a third case, or a third Mishnah, which is problematic in this scenario. We have the bright over here about purchasing korbanot. We have our Mishnah, which is, you can't be mityached with the Bema. We also have the Mishnah back on Yudalad Amun Bet that says, Makom Shinagu. There are places that have the minog to sell it to them, places that don't have the minog to sell it to them. How are Ravina and Rabbi Padat going to deal with that Mishnah over there? According to Rabbi Padat, who's the author of that Mishnah says, minog yes, minog no. What does it have to do with minog? It's either, according to Chachamim, we don't worry about it. According to Rabbi Elezer, we do worry about it. It's a halachic issue of Yisur. What does Minog have to do with it at all? And according to Ravina, where it's the difference between Lechatchila and Bidiavad, over there, we are selling the animals to them, and that would be a case of Lechatchila. In the case of Lechatchila, according to Ravina, that is a sur. So then how could you have a base that's Makom Shinagu and Makom Shalonagu? The answer the Gemara gave until now was Rav. He is Chas al Behemto. The Goy is Chas al Behemto. And therefore, we don't assume that there's a problem with his own animal. There's only a problem with your animal. That's the solution of Rav. But over here, Ravina and Rabbi Padat rejected Rav's explanation and are giving their own explanation. Once they've done that, they've rejected this answer that a Goy or an Akum is Chas al Behemto. How do they deal with that Mishnah on Yudalid Amud Bet? So the Baal Tosafot at first suggests that maybe they don't hold of Rav. And they actually hold of Rav's original answer back on Yudalid Amud Bet, which where Rav said that there's a correlation between the places that have the minog to sell animals and the fact that they don't worry about Yichud there. That there's a correlation between those two matters. And that means that they only sold in places where they also allowed for Yichud because they didn't worry about bestiality at all. And the places that they didn't sell, they also didn't allow for Yichud, and the two were correlated. So the one way to deal with this is to say, yes, they reject Rav's explanation, but they accept Rav's Havamina in the Mishnah over there. And then that way, they would be holding like Rav's original assumption, and not like his final assumption. The problem with that is that Rav Hadarbe, Rav himself backed away from that position, and now you're telling me that Rabbi Padat and Ravina subscribed to Rav's own position that he rejected? Doesn't make so much sense. As well as the fact that the Psukim over here seem to indicate that we don't worry about it according to the Chachamim whatsoever. And over there, you're suggesting to me that even according to the Chachamim, you would have a chashash. Because according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's clear that you can't have a place that's a minhag or not a minhag. He thinks that it's Isur Legamre. So the author of that mission is going to be the Chachamim. Chachamim over here say they don't worry about bestiality and they can put it on the Mizbeah. That's the case, then what's the story with that Mishnah? How can you claim that there are places where they make it Osir B'Yichud and Osir B'Mechira? Because we worry about bestiality. The Chachamim make it clear we don't worry about bestiality at all. For that reason, the Baal Tosafot suggests that both Ravina and Rabbi Padat are accepting that position of Rav. Despite accepting that position of Rav, they still think that the distinction that they make is still valid. And that is Eishlomar, the Vadai, Ben Ravina, Ben Rabbi Padat, Itlehu Shnuya the Obi Kochavim Chas al Behemto. They both agree that it's Linyan Shaloya Sar Lim Kor Lehem B'Shum Makom. To tell you that you could sell them animals any place, and we don't worry about Lifnei Ver, Lo Titen Mikshol. And that will explain the Mishnah on Yudalad Amud Bet, which is subject to Minog and not an Isur the Gamre. V'ap B'Makom Shnagu Shalolim Kor Nami Leka Yisura Ela Minhogo. That Mishnah where it says it's a sur, it's a Minog not to sell it to them, but there's no real Isur that's associated. Miu Mistaber Lo Udlin Korban Yeshlan Lahachmir. Despite that fact, they want to say that by a Korban, where we have a higher standard, maybe there we should have been Machmir. V'Leasur Af B'Makom Shemochrim. and we would make it asur, even in a place where the minhag is to sell it. And not rely on the fact that the Ovi Kuchavim is chasal b'mto, ila taima de diavad, according to Ravino, for we're not for the factor of diavad for Ravino, or for Rabitat, mukila rabonon, who serves like the chashin on the Revi'a club, who say that we don't worry about Revi'a at all. So what the Bible spoke suggests that both Ravina and Rabbi Padat accept Rab's position of an akum is chas al behemto, and despite the fact that he is chas al behemto, according to Ravina, when you want to bring a korban, we would have thought that a korban requires a much higher standard. It's not enough that he's chas al behemto. We want to know for sure that this is a clean animal. So only b'diavad do we allow it, not b'chatchilo. That's number one. For Rabbi Padat, we would say that even though there is this chasal b'emto, nevertheless, when it speaks about the korban, it's the chachamim's position who believe that there's no chashash whatsoever, and that's why you can use it by the korban. The Bayit Tosfot say, despite the fact that they hold like Rav, they would have set a higher standard by korban. They don't do that, and that's the explanation that Rabbi Dan and Ravina are giving, is why is korban different, even though you would have thought to set a higher standard, and again, even though we hold a Rav that says a goy is chasal b'emto. And we saw the Balei Tosfot use that later on to say, why is Rab's principle applicable by his own animal? But by the Parah Aduma, we don't say that Yitzro Tokfo, we say, and he was willing to ruin the animal. The answer was that he made that distinction, which is, by the case where it's his own animal, he's worried about the long-term health of the animal, and he won't get involved with it. Whereas by the Parah Aduma, which is selling it off to the Yisrael, he doesn't care about the long-term health of the animal, and Yitzro Tokfo, he'll be overcome by his Yetzer. But you see from that answer, the Bali Tosafot is that Rabbi Padat subscribes to Rav's position. Now he's trying to distinguish between Rav and Rabbi Padat. Had he believed that Rabbi Padat didn't hold of Rav, the question would never have risen because he doesn't hold like Rav. So this is Tosafot the Shittato that Rabbi Padat also holds of Rav, and therefore you're going to have to distinguish between the case of Parah Aduma, where Yitzro Tokfo, versus the case of a regular animal that is owned by the Goy. And now the Gemara says, Shmamina, from all of this that we're speaking about, this machloket between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer, that para kodshei mizbeachi. It must be that the para is classified like kodshei mizbeach, and therefore it has the same soul as kodshei mizbeach. Kodshei mizbeach have a requirement that it won't be nirba or roveya. The animal was not involved in bestiality. That's in a disqualification that involves kodshei mizbeach. It's found in the psukim at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra with regards to the korban olah that we saw yesterday. Mina bakar, mina tzon, mina beima. Each of those come to exclude certain problematic animals. So now, if it's a kodshei mizbeach, then it's under the rubric of all other kodshei mizbeach. And as Rashi explains over here, the implications of being kodshei mizbeach are, first of all, it would be pasul b'rivia. Also, in terms of redeeming the animal, it will not be able to be redeemed unless it gets a mum in it, as opposed to kodshei b'erek habayit, it can be redeemed at any time. And in addition to that, you also might have requirements in the redemption process for hamada v'haracha, to be brought before a beit din of kohanim and be assessed. According to those that think that that's a distinction between kodshei mizbeach, kodshei b'erek habayit, some think that then you need that for kodshei b'erek habayit as well, and then that wouldn't be something that's unique to kodshei mizbeach. But in essence, you're making it into like any other korban that is subject to the rules of any kodshei mizbeach. Di kodshei b'erek habayit, mi mitzala ba'rivia. If it's kodshei b'erek habayit, why is rivia disqualify it at all? So Gemara is indicating that there's a difference between kodshei mizbeach, which have to have a certain tara, purity, or level of presentability before a kodesh baruch hu, and therefore roveya or nirba would be disqualified. Kodshei b'erek habayit are simply a monetary exchange. You're donating to the mikdash, and the kodshei b'erek habayit can either be used directly in the mikdash itself, or they can be monetized for the money, and then the money is used for the beit hamikdash. But that means that the object doesn't have to have any inherent status or any qualifications to it, because even stones, as Rashi said, can be brought as kodshei b'erek habayit, because they have value. And value is all you need here in order for it to be considered kodshei b'erek habayit. Therefore, rivia or any other thing should not be posel the parat duma. If you claim that parat chatat is kodshei b'erek habayit, reason being that it's not done on the mizbeach in the mikdash, it's done out on har hazitim, the whole thing is done outside the mikdash, then maybe it's just providing the monetary means by which to do it, which is the parat duma itself. If that's the case, then roveya nirba should make no difference over here. where it says, no, Shani Para, the Chatat, Kariye Rachmana. Even if you believe it's Kodshe Benek Abayit, nevertheless, in the Parshia, Aparah Duma, the beginning of Parshat Chukat, over there it says numerous times, Chatat He, that it is a Chatat, and therefore it gains the status of a Chatat for this matter, that it will be Nifsal if there is a Riviyah.
And the Rishonim narrow the scope of the implications of being a Chatat. We're not going to say that it has requirements of Pidyon, like a Chatat or Kodshe Mizbeach. The only thing that the Chatat has application for is Mumim, disqualifications that come from Mumim. And they try to prove that from where in the Parshia Chatat appears, that it only has this aspect of Chatat with regard to these matters, and not more general matters that deal with Kodshe Mizbeach. If that's the case, then why isn't it problematic in terms of Yotzei Dofen?
There's a disqualification when it comes to animals in Kodashim that are not a birth where it comes through the vaginal canal, which is Peter Rechem. That obviously is a requirement by Bechor. The only time that you're Chayav in Bechor, Bechor is Kadosh, is Peter Rechem. If it comes through the vaginal canal, it has a regular birth. If you have a cesarean section, then a Bechor is not Kadosh because he was not Peter Rechem. So that's clearly the case by Bechor. From Bechor, we learn to all other Kodashim that the same din applies. The Kodashim Mizbeach must be Peter Rechem. So the question here is, why is a Yotzei Dofen by a Paraduma not disqualified? If you classify it as a Chatat, then it has the same status as Kodashim Mizbeach with regards to these matters. And for Ovein Yivar Pasul in it, so too Yotzei Dofen should be Posel in that case. And we're about to see that there are opinions that think that a Yotzei Dofen is fine by a Parat Chatat. So that's one way to phrase the question. The other way to phrase the question is, this is more fundamental. Not even a question if you call it a Chatat. Doesn't matter if you call it a Chatat or you call it Kodshe Mizbeach. In either scenario, you now have a problem, which is, how do you differentiate between Mumim, like Robea Nirba, versus Mumim, like Yotzei Dofen, where you're not disqualifying the animal? Why is there such a distinction? If you want to say that Yotzei Dofen is also problematic by the Parat Duma, Allah Matanyo, why do you have a braita that says, Higdisha b'yotzei dofen psula? That would accord with what we're saying here. The problem is Rabbi Shimon Machshir. Rabbi Shimon says that yotzei dofen is not a problem. And then if you say that we don't read chatat to mean chatat like Kodshe Mizbeach, rather chatat to mean from Lashon Chitui, the sprinkling of the blood, then you have to explain according to Rabbi Shimon why there is a psul by Riviyah. Now you can explain why there's no psul of yotzei dofen, but you haven't explained why there is no psul Riviyah. Or as a more generic question, as if the b'chidei Rabbi Shimon the ta'amei, if you want to say this is Rabbi Shimon the shittato, damar yotzei dofen vlad ma'aliyahu, he believes that a yotzei dofen is considered to be a full-fledged vlad. Ha'amar Rabbi Yochanan modaya Rabbi Shimon in kodoshim sheino kadosh. He agrees by kodoshim that it doesn't work or it's not kadosh. What Rabbi Shimon's din is brought by the beginning of Parshat Tazriah, where the Torah speaks about a woman giving birth and the days of Tuma and Tahara that are associated with giving birth to a male and a female. Over there, the Chachamim say that's only if they are born, Peter Rechem, is there a din of Zachar, Nekeva, and Tuma. They're born by a cesarean section. If they are born as a Yotzei Dofen, they don't have any of these dinim of Zachar, Nekeva. Rabbi Shimon over there disagrees and says there's a riboy in the Pasuk of Im Nekeva, Telei, so there's an extra word of Leida that is found there, which is a riboy, and that teaches you that no matter how the child is born, these dinim apply. And what Rabbi Yochanan says is, yes, Rabbi Yochanan believes that Yotzei Dofen is considered to be a birth that has the equivalence of a Peter Rechem, and therefore there's Tuma, Tara, and all these dinim apply, but that's only true by a woman giving birth. By Kodashim, he agrees that a Yotzei Dofen is classified as a psul. So now, how is it possible that Rabbi Shimon would allow that to happen, allow a Yotzei Dofen to be okay by a Paraduma if he believes that it is a Tzor, that it is a Mum? Now you have a problem. If the Paraduma is Kodshe Mizbeach, or if you say the Paraduma is a Chatat, either one of those should disqualify the animal because of the Yotzei Dofen. How is Rabbi Shimon Matir? Ella, shiny para, hol mum posel ba. Over here, the word Ella is pivotal. This is Rashi's Girsa in the Gemara, and we know that whenever the Gemara uses Ella, it is rejecting everything it said before, and now moving forward with a new assumption. That means that the Gemara now is rejecting what it said before, that Paraduma is Kodshe Mizbeach. It's also rejecting the fact that Paraduma is Chatat Kariya. That's not the reason that a Paraduma is Pasul. by Revia. The problem is, Shani Paro, Hoyo Umum Posel Ba. Since a mum is posel in it, Davar Erva Avodah Zarah Nami Posel Ba. Therefore, Arayot and Avodah Zarah will also cause a problem. Because Dichtiv Ki Mashchatam Bahem Mum Bam. So it says here in Vayikra and Parshat Emor, it's discussing the problems or the mumim that are in animals and therefore they cannot be brought in the Mizbeach. There it says, Mashchatam Bahem. Their destruction or their disqualification is in them because they have a mum, they have a blemish. Terminology of hashkata is a weighted term. Whenever the Torah uses the word hashkata, it involves more than simply destruction or immorality. It involves also the erva, rayot, and avodah zarah. Rashi, when he brings this on Parshat Noach, also notes shpichut damim as being another factor here. Here, shpichut damim is not going to matter so much. By the case of the Mabul, it says, Kishchit kol basar dako al aretz. Because in the beginning of Parshat Noach, it says, Vayalukim et aretz v'ineni shchata, Kishchit kol basar dako al aretz. And Rashi notes over here, that's referencing back to what was said at the end of Parshat Bereshit, which is Hashem was upset about the behavior of individuals because, Vayiru b'nei Elohim et not adam ki tovot heinu v'yichu lehem nashim mikol asher bacharu. That they took whoever they wanted. There was no morality. They took other people's wives. They took women against their will. And for that reason, it's called Kishchit Kol Basar et Darko Al Aretz. That's what it's referencing to, the Hashkata of the Dor HaMabul. That there's questions or problems about Rayot, and the Torah calls that Kishchit Kol Basar et Darko Al Aretz. That's called Hashkata, dealing with Arayot. So maybe you will do something destructive that is problematic, and what is that you're going to make? And that is making yourself a pesel. So you see the association of the word hashkata with avodah zarah and with arayot, and that means that mum involves more than simply a blemish, it involves hashkata. Anything that is hashkata is classified as a mum. So now, halay para nami holu mum poselba, devar erva, vavodat kochavim pasliba. So since the para duma is disqualified because of a mum, so now, in the extended mum definition now includes hashkata. And that means arayot and avodah zarah are also included. And the problem of revia is a problem of mum. And that when a person has bestiality with the animal now has a mum, is blemished. And that is the disqualification over here. So that means in the end, that the parah duma is koche berek abayit. The only disqualification is what the Torah says, which is mum. But mum has a more expansive definition than just simply a blemish on the animal means something like arayot and avodah zarah are also included in that mum. That's Rashi's view of the Gemara. And you can see that sheet of Rashi explicitly in the Rabbeinu Kana now, which says, Vasikna, we conclude, Elo the Rabbonon para koche mizbeachi. According to the Rabbonon, the para is considered to be koche mizbeach, and that's why there's a disqualification of Rivia. Whereas, the Rabbi Shimon para koche berakabayiti. And for Rabbi Shimon, it's koche berakabayit, and the disqualification of Rivia is because of mum poselba. This is the view of Rashi, which means that the Gemara, in the end, is setting this up, that Rabbi Shimon's opinion is that para duma is koche berek abayit, and the disqualification is mum, because according to the Chachamim, it could be koche mizbeach, it could be a chatat, either one of those would suffice, because they don't have the problem of yotzei dofen. They think a yotzei dofen is disqualified by para duma, therefore they can explain para duma as being koche mizbeach. That means that there's actually a machlok between Rabbi Shimon and Chachamim as to whether paraduma is koche berakabayit or is it koche mizbeach. That means that Rabbi Shimon's the author of the position koche berakabayit, and that's how Rashi leaves it because of the word ella over here. The Bayit Tosafot say that is so problematic because throughout Shas and Mishnayot, there are stam opinions that say that paraduma is koche berakabayit. That means that in every scenario, we're going to have to say that that's the position of Rabbi Shimon, that it's a dat yachid, and despite the fact that it's a dat yachid, the Gemara picks it up everywhere as being a given. That parah duma is a koche berek abayit, and that the Mishnayot say that it's koche berek abayit. Tosafot is unwilling to accept that, and therefore he believes that the Chachamim also think that it's koche berek abayit. But of course, the problem is the word Ella. The word Ella says we've rejected everything before and moved on with a new answer. So what Bayit Tosafot obviously have to do is get rid of the word Ella. And what they point out is that the word Ella did not appear in the old Svarim,
It was Rashi who changed the girsa and said that it should say Ella Shiny Para, and Rashi is the one who entered the word Ella into the Gemaras. He says, but before Rashi changed the girsa, the Gemaras didn't have the word Ella in it. And therefore the proper reading of the Gemara is without the word Ella in it. And then based on that, he says that it's not a machlok between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon anymore as to whether Para Duma is Kodshei Berek Abayit, because the answer of the Gemara is even within the concept of Chatat. And the Chachamim agree that it's Kodshei Berek Abayit, and the disqualification is Chatat. The only machloket between them is, what does Chatat mean? Chachamim mean Chatat means exactly like a Chatat. Anything that would disqualify a Chatat would disqualify a Para Duma. Rabbi Shimon says, Chatat mean from Lashon Chitui, the sprinkling of the blood. Therefore, their machloket is not about whether it is Kodshei Mizbeach or Kodshei Berek Abayit. Everybody agrees that it is Kodshei Berek Abayit. Dololam Kodshei Berek Abayit the Kulei Alma. Everybody agrees that it's a Kodshei Berek Abayit. The time of the Mifsula Berevia, so why is it Pasul Berevia, the Rabbi Shimon, Ho Mum Poselba? Rabbanon Tamay Vishum Dechatat Kariya Rachmano. That works well, because now in all of Shas, the Rabbanon can be the author of the position that a Para Aduma is Kodshei Berek Abayit. So the answer will be that everybody agrees it's Kodshei Berek Abayit. The question is, what disqualifies Reviyah? Is it because Chatat Karya? Which means it's not Kodshei Mizbeach, it's Kodshei Berek Abayit, but it's called a Chatat, so therefore there's a disqualification. That's the Rabbanon Shita. And they hold that Yotzei Dofen's also Pasol for the same reason, it's Chatat Karya. Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, says that it is mum posel ba, and that's the disqualification in Kodshei Berek Abayit. Mum includes arayot of Avodah Zarah, but it doesn't include Yotzei Dofen. Yotzei Dofen's not a mum, it's a problem for Bechor, it's a problem for Kodshei Mizbeach. That is not applicable over here, because this isn't Kodshei Mizbeach. That would be the machot between them, but in that way, you don't reject the answer of Chatat. You simply say that for Rabbi Shimon, the explanation must be mum posel ba, but for the Chachamim, the explanation is Chatat. And Kodshei Berek Abayit applies to both of them. They both believe that it is Kodshei Berek Abayit. Now, the one thing that Tosafot does raise over here, which is an interesting question, is why the Gemara thinks that you need Mum to be Posel the Reviyah. The Gemara in Baba Kama brings from the Mishnah in Para, it's also the Mishnah in Para, that says that if a male mounts a female, it disqualifies the Para Duma from being used as a Para Duma. Because that is considered to be lo ala aleha ol, and when the male mounts the female, it's as if it was an ol on top of the female, and that would disqualify it as a para aduma. Why don't you say that the disqualification of Riviyah is for the same problem of lo ala aleha ol, and therefore you wouldn't even need all this discussion over here. You could say the problem by para aduma is a disqualification of ol, not a disqualification of mom, chatat, koshim isbeach. It would be easy to answer that way. The Baal Tosafot give two possible answers to that. One answer is that the Reviyah Vadam is while he's standing, as opposed to an animal where the male mounts the female. And so that'd be one difference. And there would be a difference in classifying it as an O. Or he says, O, Mi'tani Allah, Chenei Rabbi Eliezer, Posel, B'chol, Kominot, Amalav, Taima, Mishum, O. Because Rabbi Eliezer also disqualifies Reviyah by other Korbanot, you can't say the disqualification comes from O. Because if it was from all, it would only be a disqualification by Para Duma, would not be a disqualification by other animals. So how do you get a disqualification that affects everything, Para Duma and other animals? You must have to say that it is a mum, or it's inherently problematic in the animal. Although again, that answer of Tosafot is not such a strong answer, because you could argue that Rebbe Eliezer has different reasons by Kodshei Mizbeach versus Para Duma. By Para Duma, it's lo ala leho. By Kodshei Mizbeach, it's a disqualification that the Torah says by Ola, that it's disqualified. That second answer isn't as strong, but that is what the Baal HaTosafot will do to deal with that problem. And now, the Gemara asks the question that you raised before. Now, obviously, this question is only according to Shila, the name of Rabbi Eliezer. If you look in the Bein Elchanano, he actually has like a gufa over here, which says, let us go back to what Shila said before and discuss it. Is it really true what Shila says? Because you could ask the following question. Elamiato, dabero b'nei Yisrael b'ichulei truma. Speak to Bnei Yisrael, and they should take from me a truma. Here you see the word v'yikichu is also used. So hachanami to Bnei Yisrael yikichu, v'eino v'dei chachamim yikichu, that only Bnei Yisrael can supply to the needs of the Mishkan, the needs of the Mikdash, or anything that's used within the Avodat HaMikdash, and not an v'dei chachamim. If you want to say, yeah, we'll make that same limud over there that we made by Parah Aduma. Gemara in Kiddushin is asking, how far does Kibud Avim go? Let's go see what this one individual did for his father in Ashkelon. In the Gemara in Kiddushin, there are more extensive stories about the tremendous wealth that Dama ben Tina had and how special he was, and the type of Kibud Avim that he provided. Rabbi Lazar is saying, this is what an Ovi Kuchavim, who's not Nitzav and Kibud Avim, does. That for a Jew who is Nitzav and Kibud Avim, certainly, Achat Kama Kama, this should be the standard by which we govern Kibud Avim. The Dama ben Netina Shemo, and his name was Dama ben Netina, a very famous story. Pam Achat Bikshu Bimenu Avanim Le'Ephod. They wanted to purchase from him stones for the Ephod. Bishishim Ribo Schar. 60 times 10,000, that's 600,000 dinarim. Rav Kahana Matni B'Shmonim Ribo was 800,000 dinarim. Vayum Aftechot Munachot Tachat Nirashotav Shel Aviv Velo Tzaharo. And the keys were under his father's pillow. And he didn't want to wake up his father from his nap to go get the keys. And the Chachamim moved on and didn't purchase it from him. Avnei Shoham Hivsik Ha'inyan. So the Bar says, you're talking about here the Avnei Shoham. On the Ephod is the either cape or apron that is worn by the Kohen Gadol that secures the Choshen, the breastplate, onto the Kohen. And it has a belt around the waist. And then it has shoulder straps that come over the top that attach to the Choshen. The belt has two rings in it, and the straps over the top have two rings in it. And then you have golden chains that connect those four rings to the breastplate, the choshen that keep it in place. On the top of the shoulders of the Kohen Gadol, there were two settings that were Avnei Shoham. That's what we're speaking about here, those two settings of the Avnei Shoham. And what the Gemara is pointing out is that Pasuk, in the beginning of Parshat Truma, it says, V'ikhu Elecha, and then it lists all the items that you need. In that list, Avnei Shoham are mentioned, but they lack a Vav. And since they lack a Vav, the assumption is that Avnei Shoham are not included under the requirement of Vikhu Elecha. And so that's why Avnei Shoham were an exception to the rule. Where it says, Baha, V'Avnei Miluim Ktiv. So doesn't it say, after the Avnei Shoham, which are written without a Vav, it says, V'Avnei Miluim with a Vav, Hadar Arve. It now brought it back in. Where it says, Dabero B'nei Yisrael V'Ikhu Li Truma, V'Ikhu Ish Asheid Venu Libo Tikhu Et Trumati, V'Zota Truma Asher Tikhu Meitam, Zahav, V'Chesef, Unichoshet, Utchelet, V'Argaman, V'Tulat Shani, V'Sheish V'Izim, V'Rot Elim Ma'adamim, V'Rot Techashim V'Atzei Shitim, Shemen Amor, B'Samim L'Shemen HaMishkav, V'Liktoret HaSamim, Avnei Shoham, V'Avnei Miluim, L'Fod V'Lachoshet. So the lack of the Vav by the Avnei Shoham, and the presence of the Vav by the Vavnei Miluim, is what's driving the Gemara over here. So you have Machloket Rashi, Tosafot, and the Rabbeinu Hananel, as that explained this. Rashi says, when it says V'Avnei Miluim afterwards, it comes to tell you that everything before it was also included. Because you have a Vav HaChibur at the end of V'Avnei Miluim, that covers anything between V'Ikhu Elecha and V'Avnei Miluim. So V'Avnei Miluim includes itself, and now also includes the Avnei Shoham, because it's after the Avnei Shoham, and as the Vav HaChibur tells you, everything beforehand is also included in V'Ikhu Elecha. That's the way Rashi reads it. The Baal Tosafot don't like that because of what we learned in the Gemara in Shavuot. The Gemara in Shavuot wants to know, how do you know what the Chataot, HaRigalim, are Mechaper bar? And there the Gemara says it's because there's a Smichut HaParshiot in Parshat Pinchas between the Musafim of all the different holidays. So there the Gemara said, wait a minute, some of them have a Vav HaChibur, some of them don't have a Vav HaChibur. There in the end it says, well, the last one, Sukkot, has a Vav HaChibur, but there the Gemara says that last Vav HaChibur only includes that item, doesn't include everything between it and Rosh Chodesh. So how do you get a connection between them with that Vav at the end? So Baal Tosafot would say, you see, the Gemara thinks when there's a Vav HaChibur at the end, that that doesn't work. That doesn't mean everything before it's included, it only includes itself, nothing else. The Baal Tosafot do not like that explanation of Rashi. The Rabbeinu Hananel gives a different answer, which is, V'Ikhu Elecha is found in Parshat Truma, and in the listing in Parshat Truma, the Avnei Shoham do not have a Vav. On the other hand, in the listing of the materials of the Mishkan in Parshat Vayakel, the Avnei Shoham do have a Vav there. Where it says, K'chu mi'itchem Truma l'Hashem, kol nediv libo yivyeh Trumat HaShem Zahav, v'chesef u'nechoshet,
etc., etc., etc. Then it says, the Avne Shoam, the Avne Miluim, Naifod Velakoshen. And in Pashat Vayakel, there is a Vav by the Avne Shoham.
And that's what the, you know, Kananel says the Gemara is pointing out. Yes, in this Pasuk, it doesn't have a Vav. But if you go to Vayakel, it does have a Vav, and that shows you that they are all connected and they all have the same din. That's the view of the Rabbeinu Kananel. The Baal Yatosvot, on the other hand, say that the whole thing was about the Avne Miluim for the Choshen itself, and not about the Avnei Shoham. And even though the Gemara here says they bought it for the Eifod, they didn't mean really the Eifod, they meant the Eifod that holds the Choshen, and they're buying it for the Choshen. And that way, the Gemara says, Hifsik Ha'inyan. V'ichwe Lecha, there were all these materials mentioned, each one has a Vav. Then the Avnei Shoham come, and they don't have a Vav. That makes it now that there's a gap, or a stop, in the Pasuk. And then afterwards, the Avnei Miluim are mentioned. So it sounds like the Avnei Miluim are not governed by the Vichu Elecha, because the Avnei Shoham in between it and the Vichu Elecha makes a break, because there's no Vav by the Avnei Shoham. The answer of the Gemara is, the Avnei Miluim have a Vav in them. And the Vav of the Avnei Miluim connected back to Vichu Elecha, even though the Avnei Shoham are not governed by Vichu Elecha, similar to what we did in the Gemara in Shavuot, where the Vav of Sukkot took it back to the original item, the Rosh Chodesh, but it did not affect anything in between. The things in between that didn't have a Vav, you have to include for some other way. But the one that has a Vav takes it back to the original Regel, or Chatat, the original Chatat Musafim, that tells us what the din of a Chatat Musafim is. So that's the third way to learn it. That's the Baalei Tosafot, that say the whole thing speaks about Avnei Miluim. And the Gemara is just pointing out that Avnei Miluim solves your problem over here, because it has a Vav of Chibor, even though the Inyan was Nifsak, by Avnei Shoham without a Vav. So Gemara says, Va'og Tani Seifa, the other problem is, L'shana Acheret, Noda Lo Para Duma Be'edro. Following year, he had a Para Duma that was born in his flock. Nichnesu Chachmei Yisrael Etzlo, the Chachamim came to purchase it from him. Amalehem Yodeani, Vahechem, Shimani Mivakesh Mikem Kol Mamon Sholam Atem Nodnili. He says, I can name my price here because I know how valuable this Para Duma is to you. Shavani Mivakesh Mikem Elo Oto Mamon Shifsarati Bishvil Abo. The only thing I'm going to ask you for is the money you would have paid me for the Avnei Miluim or the Avnei Shoham, depending on whose opinion, that I forfeited by not waking up my father. So now you have a problem, which is, even if you believe that you can solve the problem by the Avnei Miluim or the Avnei Shoham, the story continues and says that they purchased a Parah Adumah. So there, V'ichu Elecha, you have the same drasha by the Parah Adumah. Over there, there's no question that the drasha exists, according to Shila, in the name of Rabbi Eliezer. So now you have to solve the problem for both of them. And the answer is, they did it through middlemen. They had Sir Surim, the way Rashi reads it, they had brokers. Sir Sur Yisrael Lacha Mishalo, Mina of De Kochamim. They broker bought it from Dama Vimentino, and then the Chachamim bought it from the Yisrael. So basically it passed the Jew's hand, and that was Natahir it, and that allowed it to be done because it's being purchased from a Jew. Even though the Jew himself bought it from an Ovid Kochamim. Which seems to defeat the purpose, because before the Gemara was assuming that the problem of Raviyah would be eliminated because you can only buy it from a Jew, not buy it from an Ovid Kochavim. In this manner, you would not eliminate the problem because you are buying from an Ovid Kochavim that sold it to a Jew. And that would seem to be the issue. But if you say it's a Gzerah Kadub, it has to be bought from a Jew, maybe that works. Rabbeinu Hanano gives a slightly different explanation. He says, Doma Ventina Zoa Para Lo No Dolami Para Shalom. It wasn't born from his own cows. Ela mitagar Yisrael zavno. He purchased it from a Jewish sirsur. Yisrael ayu mishamim et imam mishash notra. And they were taking care of it all along. So it actually belonged to a Jew who sold it to Dama ben Netina, but the Jew held on to it and took care of it on behalf of Dama ben Netina. So Dama ben Netina's ownership was solely that. It was ownership, but he didn't have any access to the animal. He wasn't involved with the animal all along. It was a Jew who brought it up. It was a Jew who had it originally, and he bought it from this Sirsur Yisrael, but he never took possession of it. Since he didn't take possession of it, it's considered as if he bought it from Yisrael. So that's the way the Rabbeinu Kananel deals with that issue. Now, what's interesting here is that the Baalei Tosafot over here do something they do in Gemara and Sota as well, which is, how is it possible that the Chachamim were dealing with the Avnei Shoham during the Bayit Sheni? He says, we're definitely speaking of Bayit Sheni because they're buying a Parah Adumah. Moshe's Parah Adumah lasted all the way till the time of Ezra. And so there was no Parah Adumah needed to be bought in Bayit Rishon. You're clearly speaking about Bayit Sheni, where they're purchasing a Parah Adumah, and they're also purchasing Avnei Shoham in Bayit Sheni. How is that possible? Because the only way to make the Avnei Shoham is with the shamir. The shamir is a worm that is able to break the precious stones without causing any diminishment or loss in the stone. Normally when you engrave something on a stone, you have loss because you're taking out the stone in order to do the engraving. The Torah requires that the Avnei Shoam be whole and there's nothing missing from them. So how do you engrave them without having something missing? So the Gemara describes a process in which you wrote in ink on the precious stone, on the Avnei Shoam, and then this shamir would go in and would basically break it along the lines of the ink. The Gemara gives an example like a fig that is sitting out in the sun. When its fig is ripe and full, it's sitting on the sun, it's mitbakeya. It breaks open. It doesn't lose anything, but it breaks open and it cracks. So that's the same thing over here. He cracks the stone in a way that it gets engraved without losing anything. The Baal Tosafot say the Gemara in Sota suggests that the shamir was lost at the end of Bayit Rishon. Shemaitu Nevi'im Rishonim, Badu Urim Bitumim. Once Nevi'im Shem Hashem disappeared, the Durim Bitumim also disappeared. It was no longer used. Shara Beit HaMikdash, Patel HaShamir. When the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, the Shamir goes. The Mashmash Shara Beit HaMikdash, Hanu Bayit Rishon. In the context of Nevi'im Rishonim, it makes it sound like we're speaking about Bayit Rishon. And the Churban of Bayit Rishon is what caused the Shamir to be taken out of service. So what he says is, don't read it that way. You have to bifurcate the din. Nevi'im Rishonim is about that. Shara Beit HaMikdash is about Bayit Sheni. And that's the Batel HaShamir is only at the end of Bayit Sheni. But then the Baal Tosafot run into a problem, which is the story of Chanukah. The Gemara tells us by the story of Chanukah that the Greeks came in and defiled the Mizbeach in the Mikdash, and then the Chashmonaim wanted to replace it and re-sanctify the Mizbeach. So then they were in a bind. They didn't know how to put the stones back in. Because if you cut the stones, it says, Lo Tanit Valeim Barzel. You can't use metal in order to cut the stones. If you put the stones in without cutting them, then the Mizbeach is not straight, it has what's called a pgam in it. It has catches in the mizbeach. You can't find smooth stones to put in there. They're not going to have a catch if you don't cut the stones. So they were in a catch-22 about how to build the mizbeach. Lo tanif aleihem barzel, or you're going to have a problem that it's going to be pagum, the mizbeach. So they're trying to deal with it, and they come up with a solution, which is that you can cut them outside the mikdash and then bring them in. Lo tanif aleihem barzel is only in the place where the mizbeach is being made. You can't cut them. You can cut them outside. Or you can do what they did, was make a mold and then put the stones in there and then fill the stones with seed so that the lime sat around the stones and created that smoothness around them. Tosafot says, why do they have a problem at all? Let them use the shamir. The shamir cuts stone without metal. It's a worm that has that capacity to cut through very difficult substances. And so why did they use the shamir in that case? So the Baal Tosafot, based on their shittatam, that says the shamir existed by Sheni, that should have been the perfect solution. The cut of the shamir doesn't make it smooth. It causes it to crack and open up, so it gives you the feeling of engraving, but it still does not give you a clean and smooth cut. And therefore, you can't use the shamir to solve the problem. The Baal Tosafot are trying to deal with the practicality of having Avnei Shoam or Avnei Miluim for the Eifod and the Choshen in Bayit Sheni because of the requirement for the Shamir by the Avnei Shoam. How did they do that if the Shamir was put into Geniza after Bayit Rishon? He says that wasn't after Bayit Rishon. When it says Chorav Beit HaMikdash, it means Bayit Sheni. And the Shamir is not amongst the items that was listed as a difference between Bayit Rishon and Bayit Sheni. And he thinks the Shamir was around during Bayit Sheni. Okay, we're going to stop here. It's 11 dines down on the top of Chav Dalet Amud Aleph.